everybody, and welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Look Back and Animat's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, the title will explain everything for you. It is a podcast, and I talk about animation. I know, right? Like, when I look into the title, I was thinking, it's like, what does animation have to do with anything? But that is why, apparently. But specifically, the latest news that happened this week. So for today's episode, we will start things off by looking into the plot of what will be Cars 3. Then afterwards, we will be congratulating Zootopia for being the second biggest original film of all time. Then afterwards, we will be looking into the Weinstein Company, who is going to sue Open Road because they want to play with toys, but the other one doesn't want to, and we got this big kind of mess. Then we will be looking into the first ever Japanese animated feature, and finally, we will end things off with Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. So, for our first story, we are going to be looking into... Cars 3. Oh boy. I mean, what is there really to say about Cars 3? I think I probably have never seen a Pixar film that is this unanticipated. I mean, this is probably the least demanded film that Pixar has ever released, especially afterwards when they've released what is arguably, or pretty much unanimously said, to be the worst Pixar film ever released. And honestly, Cars 2, basically. That's pretty much the one that I'm talking about. And honestly, Cars 2 is actually the film that I look back and when I think back of my review and I remember I gave it like a 6 out of 10 and I was thinking like, something's not right there. I need to double check on that. It's like one of those that I'm probably willing to re-review now to see like, That rating doesn't sound right. Is it real? It's like, it can't have. It's like, it doesn't seem like a 6 out of 10 film. I mean, like, I'll give it this. The animation, like, they did a good job with the animation, yes, but it's the writing that really fell apart. And that is pretty much why, like, when it comes to the Cars films, that's why it has a bit of a distaste, per se, when it comes to the Pixar films in general. The one that kind of lost credibility, like some credibility to Pixar, and lost all credibility to pretty much just the Cars franchise. And honestly, like just the Cars franchise in general, it's probably the least deserving to have an entire trilogy. Like, I would rather have either a Brave trilogy or even a Good Dinosaur trilogy over a Cars trilogy. I mean, like, really, you could tell this is just the kind that they're not usually made for the audience that Pixar would normally aim for. This one is just like, you could tell this is just for kids, or this is more like John Lasseter's personal love letter to Cars. And, you know, that's just like, that's kind of the problem. They did it for both the kids, and John Lasseter was just doing it for himself. And that's why, like, Cars is not necessarily the most reputable one, like the most reputable Pixar franchise, even though the toys are selling huge, like a stupid amount, but I digress. Now, let's get into the subject we are going to talk about, and it's going to be Cars 3. Now, we don't really know a lot about what's going on with Cars 3. We only know about two things. Now, USA Today has revealed, one, who's going to be the director, and two, what the plot of Cars 3 will be. Now, I will say this right now that the director that they picked up is a new guy. This is going to be his directorial debut, and this is a man called Brian Fee, whom previously at Pixar was a storyboard artist. He worked on films like Ratatouille, WALL-E, Monsters University, and especially the Cars movies. Like, he did both Cars 1 and Cars 2, and is pretty much the reason why Brian Fee pretty much got the job as the director of Cars 3, because even taking a quote from John Lasseter himself, it says here, where is it? There's a quote from John Lasseter saying, "Brian was a part of the original story team on Cars, so he really knows the DNA." And I think, yeah, that's pretty much it for what John Lasseter said. Okay, so we know that about Brian Fee, but now let's get into the story. What is Cars 3 about? Now, this isn't anything so over the top. We are going back to the main subject. It's about racing, and it's about Lightning McQueen. Now, already the car, like, this year, actually, the Cars movies is already getting 10, it's already getting 10 years old. Like, the first Cars is already 10 years old, which is actually pretty crazy to think about. And at this point, Lightning McQueen is getting a bit old. Now, I'm not saying, like, pretty much like Doc in the first film old. I mean, like, he's getting a bit older. He's, like, he's pretty much, you know, he's still in good shape. He could still race. But it's just that with the more competitions that he's going, the more he realized that there are more new rookies coming out. Like, more new rookies in the same way how Lightning McQueen was in the first movie. But now, McQueen is a part of the older team. Like, now McQueen is in the shoes of, I forgot who, like, the champion's name, you know, the guy sponsored by Dynaco. Like, now McQueen is in that position, and then we get, like, those little new ones. And specifically, taking a quote here from USA Today and from director Brian Fee. Now, apparently, also, I just want to add, before I go into that, that because of this, because that Lightning McQueen is one of the older cars, people have been always asking him, like, what is he going to do now? Like, is he getting old? Is he about to retire? And all that kind of stuff. And it says here, taking the quote, "These questions grow louder after a race trouncing by upstart Jackson Storm. Jackson Storm is the face of these rookies who have come onto the scene," said Fee. "And McQueen is in a position where his entire racing generation is being pushed out, but it is too early to be shown the door right now. However, Lightning McQueen will not give up just yet, because now he is going to get some help with a new car, which, like, he's going to get a brand new trainer, and it's apparently the sleek yellow Cruz Ramirez, a young Hispanic female race car who instructs Lightning McQueen as, and also as this exclusive concept art depicts during a beach run. Cruz Ramirez is trying to figure out how this old dog can learn some new tricks, says Cars 3 director Brian Fee. Oh, and by the way, that's actually another thing that I forgot to mention, is that USA Today also brought out two new exclusive concept art for Cars 3, which I will say, if you're expecting to show that it shows a lot, no, it does not. Now, they're very well made. Now, don't get me wrong. These are actually really good concept art provided. Oops. Oh, fudge nabbit. Hold on. It clicked me to another place. What the fridge? Anyways, okay. Get me back here, USA Today. Okay. This is apparently coming from, these are concept art made by Noah Klosek, I believe. Yes, I believe it's Noah Klosek. Okay, he did such a great job. Like, it looks beautiful. It's almost like that, what is it? Like, you know that concept art of that, like, that cute little bird that's going to be the animated short that's going to be in front of Finding Dory? Yeah, it's very reminiscent of that. But we just see Cruz Ramirez and Lightning McQueen just driving, and that's pretty much all that we see so far. And, okay, so on top of that, going back into the story, of course, not only are we going to see some new cars like Jackson Storm and Cruz Ramirez, but of course, a lot of the old favorites are going to return. We cannot have a Cars movie without Mater, voiced by Larry the Cable Guy. We also got McQueen's girlfriend, Sally Carina, and we also got the auto body shop owner, Ramon. And, yeah, that's pretty much the whole idea of what Cars 3 will be. And if I could be very honest, just reading through this, like, honestly, I'm not excited for it. I'm not the kind of person that's really interested in cars in general, not just the franchise, but, you know, like, automobiles and all that kind of stuff. Like, I remember I even went to, I even went to this racing competition just to watch, like, cars go fast, and honestly, that's all that I got. I just see cars going fast and didn't really understand what's going on. And, but going into this one, I'll admit that, you know, it sounds like it's better than Cars 2, but that's really not saying much. I mean, the biggest issue with Cars 2 is that it really jumped the shark, even for the premise of what the Cars franchise should be about. And basically, the whole theme is about racing, and the main character is Lightning McQueen. In Cars 2, however, they somehow changed everything, where they decided to introduce this spy story, and also they want to make Mater the main character. Like, Lightning McQueen was barely involved with the plot, other than, like, he was there other than to be in the races. Like, it's just to give an excuse for Mater to go around the world. That's pretty much it. At least with this one, it's about racing and it's about Lightning McQueen. So at least they got the themes to it right. But honestly, I don't know, in terms of, like, how the script will be, how the characters will be themselves, that I am a bit curious. But I don't know, I feel like maybe this could be like Planes, Fire, and Rescue. Because if you guys remember Planes, like the first Planes movie, that was horrible. Like, it was it ran with a garbage script. Like, the animation was decent enough for what it's trying to do, but the script was garbage. It was completely unorganized. It was a freaking mess. And there was barely a plot. Like, the first act of the film is pretty much the first two acts, like, rushed into one. And then suddenly, like, the rest of the movie is just an hour's worth of the big race. And that's it. The second one, however, is not really a good movie, but it's not bad. It's the kind that you come in with really low expectations, and then you come out of it as like, well, that wasn't good, but it came out a lot better than I thought. So, like, the best way to describe Planes, Fire, and Rescue is that it's an improvement, and that's what I'm getting with Cars 3, is that it doesn't seem like it's going to be good per se, but it'll feel like an improvement from last time. And also, I just want to add that the voices of Jackson Storm and Cruz Ramirez, it has yet to be announced. Honestly, like, with everything in terms of Cars 3 is that, I don't know, I'm just going to put, like, honestly, maybe I'm going to do, like, the same thing with what I did last time with the Planes movies, is that I'm going to come in, have low expectations, like, I'm going to think it's going to suck, because at least it'll help me, like, if the movie comes out a bit better, at least I'll be more positive to it. Like, I'll come out saying, like, huh, that wasn't so bad, you know? Like, you know, like, it does have a bit of promise, and honestly, for, like, this is the kind of movie, especially, this is made exclusive, like, this is made just for the fans of Cars. Like, the kids who love Cars and Cars fans, they are going to love this movie. It's going to be more about them, and it will feature a lot, like, the main components will be featured a lot more with Lightning McQueen and also, you know, the elements of racing. Sure, we do get a lot of the racing elements in Cars 2, but that's not the important thing. The important thing in there is all about, like, the spy stuff. In here, this is about the racing, so at least they will give the fans what they want. And, you know, I guess that's kind of the important thing, but I don't know. I just don't know. Like, I'm not going to come in with high expectations. Besides, like, 2017 is not going to be the year that we're just going to skip a Pixar film, because at the same time, they are also going to release an original animated feature called Coco, directed by Lee Unkrich, the same man who brought us Toy Story 3. And honestly, I'm a lot more excited for that, because at least, like, when Pixar would release an original film, at least it'll be good. Like, it could either be, like, amazing, like, really, like, one of the best animated features of the decade, like, Inside Out, or it could come out pretty good. Like, oh, like, if you take away the element that this is a Pixar film, like, it's still a pretty good animated feature, like Brave or The Good Dinosaur. This, however, I don't know, I'm not going to come in with high expectations. Like, I'm not going to come in thinking that it's going to be good, but I'm not going to be coming in thinking that it's going to be bad either. I don't know, we're just going to wait and see how things go with it. And we'll see how things go with Cars 3 when the movie will be released. Hold on, fudge nabbit, I got the... Okay, yeah, here we go. Okay, when the movie will be released on June 16th, 2017. Holy crap, I just realized that's actually close to a year from the time I'm recording this. Huh. Well, what do you know? Okay, so for our next story, this is actually a pretty interesting thing. And, like, it actually says a lot regarding modern cinema, how things are going today. And this is actually a very rare accomplishment. And once again, this is going to be about a movie nobody expected is going to be this big. But wow, did it really come out phenomenal. And of course, I am talking about Zootopia, the little animated feature that could, where a lot of people believe that, oh, this is going to be the side project. Okay, this is going to be the cute little thing they're going to release first, and then afterwards, people are just going to build up more anticipation for Moana. Now, the anticipation for Moana to come out is going to be big, like, it's still there, but my God, nobody expected Zootopia to be this amazing. I mean, like I stated with Inside Out, this is immediately one of the best animated features of the decade. And even right now, like, not only critically is it just universally acclaimed, but also when you look at, when you look at the box office, as I'm recording this, it is only just a few steps away from being the fourth animated feature to ever surpass $1 billion at the box office. Right up there next to Toy Story 3, Frozen, and Minions. However, considering the box, and this is pretty much the subject that we are going to talk about, the fact that it's so close to getting $1 billion at the box office. And with that said, Forbes has officially declared that Zootopia is officially the second biggest original movie ever released. The first, of course, being Avatar. Now, when I mean original movie, this is not based on anything. As you may know, the grand majority of films, they would be based on books, they would be based on comic books, they would be reboots, stage plays, or whatever. But Zootopia is not based on anything. This is a story that Disney had to build completely from the ground up. And keep in mind, like, plus the fact that it is from Disney, and they would often rely on taking classic fairy tales or classic stories and just build up an entire story from there. So it's actually quite phenomenal that not only Disney in general just released an original film, but also the fact that it became this big. It's just freaking sensational. And yeah, as you could probably guess, of course, I love Zootopia. I mean, as I'm recording this, we're only just a few days from the movie being released on Blu-ray, and I cannot wait to get my hands on it. No matter what, I know this for a fact, that I'm going to go out to the DVD store and I'm going to get myself that Blu-ray, because my God, I am so excited. I want to get it. I want to own Zootopia. It really is that amazing. And, you know, the fact that this actually became the second biggest original movie ever, it really makes you think regarding today's modern cinema and today's major motion pictures, and how pretty much original films are becoming more and more of a rare breed. I mean, like, I guess the best way to put it is a rare breed. I'm not going to say extinct, but it's not every day that you would come out with a rare movie. Even, I remember last year, some of the biggest, I think there's this one guy who posted that in 2015, among the top 25 highest grossing films of all time, there were only two of them that were original. They were not based on anything. They were not a sequel. Like, they were just original films. One being Inside Out and the other being San Andreas. And you know, this is honestly why I love animation, probably more so than than most live action films released today, because you know, it's pretty much it's the easiest place where you can find to have an original story, you know, to have to come up with something original. And even nowadays, even in this decade alone, you can only think of just a handful of original films. Like, there ain't really a lot of them that are not sequels, or they're not based on anything. Like, they're just original films. I mean, of course, there's Zootopia, and then that's one of the saddest things. Like, when you think, actually, I just realized, when you think about the last decade, you would think about Pixar and how every year they would release an original animated film. Like, not once did they even release a sequel or anything like that. Like, you would think Monsters, Inc., and then afterwards it's Finding Nemo, The Incredibles, Cars, Ratatouille, WALL-E, and then Up. It's quite amazing how they were able to release so many original animated films. But then when you think of this decade, not only right now, but even their upcoming films, they would only have a total of 4 original films. And not all of them are as great as, the golden age of Pixar, you know? Like, you got Brave, and then you got Inside Out, and then you got The Good Dinosaur, and then, coming soon, you'll have Coco. And that's pretty much it. The rest that Pixar has released are just sequels. And that, you know, that's pretty much why Pixar is not as big as they used to be, is because, now they're just releasing sequels. I mean, keep in mind, though, beforehand, when they released a sequel with the Toy Story films, it's freaking phenomenal. Even I still believe that they peaked with Toy Story 3. It's possibly their greatest animated feature, and hands down, one of the best animated features ever made. But then, they immediately went downhill after they released stuff like Cars 2. And then Monsters University. And then we're going to be getting more sequels. We're going to be getting Finding Dory soon. And then there's going to be Cars 3. And then there's going to be The Incredibles 2. You know, to give them credit, The Incredibles 2, it's possibly the most anticipated Pixar, the most anticipated Pixar sequel, and possibly the most demanded Pixar sequel ever made. But my God, we had to wait 15 years for The Incredibles 2, and the rest we have to go through a lot of bad ones. Oh, and not to mention, they're also going to release Toy Story 4. On top of that, I still can't believe that Gonzo actually predicted that in Muppets Most Wanted. It's actually crazy. And then, those are just Pixar, and you know, those are just Pixar films, and it really says a lot of how this decade, we're really getting very few original films. So not just the 4 original Pixar films, but also, when you think of others, it's pretty hard, to be very honest. Not even Disney. The only original animated feature you could think from Disney, so far, we got Zootopia and we got Wreck-It Ralph. And even the others, it's pretty hard to think about. There's Rio, with Blue Sky, there's Rio. I think that's it. I don't know, I forgot, if we could count Epic, or I think it was actually based on something, but I don't know. Okay, but so far, I'm going to count Rio in there, and then with Sony, with the way that they're holding it, literally the only original animated feature that they released this decade is Hotel Transylvania, and then they're going to kill themselves with the Emoji Movie, and afterwards, then other companies even DreamWorks, often there are some, but they're not really that noteworthy. The most that I can think of, let's see, Turbo. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Okay, we got Turbo. There's Turbo. That's it. And then also, but then you also got Illumination. You also got Despicable Me. And that's it. And okay. And then we also got the stop motion films. We got the stop motion films. We got like, we got Paranorman. And that's it. That's it. Like, I can't even count Coraline. Coraline was 2009. Box Trolls was based on a book that I know. And that's it. I mean, that's pretty much it in terms of the major, you know, in terms of the major studios. That's it. I mean, even Aardman. Like Aardman, okay, like Aardman has released some to its credit. Like, okay, we got, you know, we got Arthur Christmas, we got the Pirates Band of Misfits, or if you're in the UK, the Pirates in the Adventures with Scientists, or some kind of long, complicated title. But that's pretty much it. Like, you see where I'm going at? Like, you understand that throughout this whole time, I'm having such complications to think about, like, all the original animated features released. And keep in mind, though, of course, like, when you think about the independent animated features, of course, they're going to release, that's pretty much the easiest place where you can find original original animated feature films. But I'm talking about in terms of the big budget coming from a major studio. Like, you can only think of a handful. And not all of them come out great, by the way. I mean, like, not, like, when it's original, it doesn't mean that they're a masterpiece. There are some that would come out, like, either, like, Norm of the North, or Escape from Planet Earth, or Hotel Transylvania. They don't come out great. They kind of suck. And that's kind of the problem, because it would discourage, like, because they're not that good, it kind of discourages people to do something new, and instead stick with something that already exists, or just, like, you know, make more sequels. And this is why we have to appreciate something like Zootopia a lot more. This is why we really need to cherish it. Because it's not every day that we're going to get a movie this original, that it comes out with new ideas. And on top of that, we're not going to see an animated film we're not going to see this all the time, an animated film that would go and take risks. Like, it is amazing how a Disney animated film like Zootopia would go out and talk about something like bigotry and discrimination. And it could not have been released at a better time, considering we're at the age of the 2016 presidential elections, and we got pretty much Donald Trump going insane and pretty much, like, trying to bring in crazy people to go vote for him, and how it's frightening to think about he's actually one step closer to actually becoming president, where it started out as a funny joke and then is starting to get a lot more serious. You know, it couldn't have been a better time to be released. Like, some may argue that it could be luck, but in a way, this is just pure genius, honestly. It hit all the spots correctly. And this is not to mention the beautiful animation, the fantastic writing, the beloved characters, great acting. It hit every note correctly. And honestly, this is why we have to cherish something like Zootopia a lot more, because it's not every day that we're going to get an animated film, or just a movie in general, that is original, and it comes out with a quality like this. I mean, this is why people go to the movies. This is why people watch movies, to experience something great and to experience something original. And I have to say, congratulations to the people at Disney for creating what is now known as the second biggest original movie of all time. Now, for our next story, I want to bring you back to a simpler time, back when you were kids. Now, you might have had, like, a sibling, or, you know, you're in preschool, or you're in, like, kindergarten or something like that, and you want to play with your toys, but then suddenly, there's another kid that stepped in, takes your toys, and he's going to play with it. Now, you might feel a bit mad, and you want to go tell your mom, or you want to tell the teacher that, like, little Bobby over there stole your freaking toys, and you want to play with it. Well, apparently, imagine businessmen doing that. Yes, businessmen are actually doing the exact same thing. You got one businessman stealing another businessman's toys, and now the other businessman with no toys is going to tell on him. And what I'm referring to is the Weinstein Company is going to sue Open Road Studios and the producers of The Little Prince because the Weinstein Company cannot be the distributors of the Playmobil movie. Specifically, what's going on is that the Weinstein Company, they were so close to having a deal to be the distributors for the Playmobil movie, and they even put in a $35 million deal to make this happen. This would even include, or I think that's like an additional cost, but they even include some extra money to go and, you know, to go help out with the marketing and the promotions and all that kind of stuff. However, somehow the people that made the Playmobil movies, or the producers, they decided to cancel it and move on with Open Road so that they could be the distributors. And the Weinstein Company will not stand for this, and they're going to go and, you know, pretty much sue for the damages. And that's pretty much what's been going on. And in fact, referring to what I mentioned about the Weinstein Company with the marketing thing, they even put in what is said to be a $10 million minimum guarantee to the producers. Let me reread that. The deal between the Weinstein Company and the Playmobil team saw the distributors have to pay a $10 million minimum guarantee to the producer defendants, of which 10% would be paid upon execution of a deal memo, 80% would be paid upon essential delivery, and 10% would be paid upon complete delivery. On top of that, what the Weinstein Company promised, that's just $10 million for the budget. A release that the Weinstein Company promised is an agreement to get on at least 2,000 screens simultaneously after forking out at least $25 million in advertising and promotion. And honestly, this seems, with this entire case, this just seems a little bit ridiculous, because you got one company that doesn't really understand much about animation against another company that doesn't really understand much about animation, pretty much arguing with each other for something that people can argue would claim that this is pretty much a Lego movie ripoff. I mean, not to be mean about the Playmobil movie, I'm sure, maybe it could come out great. I'm sure director Lino DeSalvo has ways to make Playmobil into an interesting, fun, and engaging original animated feature, but we all know the intentions of why the Playmobil movie existed. It's because they want to cash in on the Lego movie. And honestly, that's what makes it kind of ridiculous. And especially the fact that with the Weinstein Company and Open Road Studios, they're kind of in terms of the animation field, they're kind of like third rate. I mean, with the Weinstein Company, they have been releasing crap after crap after crap. Like, these are the people that pretty much released stuff like Escape from Planet Earth. They also released Hoodwink 2 and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, maybe in the 2000s, they kind of got a lucky shot when they released stuff like Hoodwinked, like the first Hoodwinked, and maybe TMNT. But in recent years, you don't trust the Weinstein Company releasing an animated feature. And on top of that, and then you also got Open Road Studios. Now, maybe I'm being a little bit too harsh on Open Road Studios because they just entered this market. But the only film that they got released was The Nut Job. And that really sucked. And nobody really demanded to have any more movies of the Nut Job, yet for some reason next year they're going to make the Nut Job 2, which still makes no sense, because the only thing I could ask is just, who the fridge are you doing this for? And, you know, just seeing those two companies fight against each other, I don't think it's even going to be worth it. And, you know, with the Weinstein Company promising, for 2,000 screening, like, for at least 2,000 screens, like, for to appear in 2,000 theaters, honestly, it doesn't feel that much. It feels like, honestly, that kind of tells me that this Playmobil movie will not be that big. It's not going to be, like, the biggest surprise that people are going to see, like, oh my god, I gotta go see this film. No. It's nothing like that. It just feels like this movie is just gonna be like, oh, okay, they're releasing, like, it's just gonna be released in a few places here and there, and nothing really much. It's not like the actual big animation studios. Like, when you think of, like, something like Disney or Universal, when they would release an animated feature, that they would pretty much be almost double. They always release in close to 4,000 theaters. At least that way, they know they can get people's attention when they have an animated feature release. This one, I mean, like, with the Playmobil, is it really worth it? And I guess, overall, this is kind of the big question that I want to ask. Like, with all this bickering and arguing and, like, this entire lawsuit going on, is it really worth it? Is it really worth it for the Playmobil movie? Like, do you really think it's going to make you that much money? Do you think people are really going to rush in for the Playmobil movie? I don't really know. That I'm not really that convinced. And honestly, this is sounding like exactly what the Escape from Planet Earth is going on. Now, in terms of the production, it seems like things are going fine in the creative standards, but there was at one point, Escape from Planet Earth got, it got a lawsuit. You know, that's basically what happened. And I mean, like, if you're really going for the trouble to sue another, to go into an entire lawsuit for a feature film, that movie might not really be worth it. Just saying, that's kind of the thing. And, you know, that's the entire thing with this lawsuit, is that it really is discouraging me expecting much from a Playmobil movie. And I don't know if it's really going to be worth it, but is it going to be worth it or not? I don't really know, but we will just have to wait and see when the movie will be released on August 31st, 2019. So for our next story, this is honestly something that the animation historian side of me is looking into, and I just saw this news and I was like, ooh, this is fancy. Honestly, I have to talk about this. This is really fascinating. And once again, this really touches into the animation historian side of me. And, you know, it's actually quite fascinating to see this mentioned. And what I am going to talk about is actually a movie called Momotaro Sacred Sailors. Now, some of you might be wondering, what the fridge is Momotaro? Well, let me tell you, Momotaro is actually an animated feature released in 1945, and it is actually the first ever Japanese animated feature. So, what is it really special about Momotaro? Well, apparently, the company screw it. I'm not going to say the company. Okay. It's too complicated for my little brain to comprehend or to even say. So the company that made Momotaro, they pretty much restored it, and they actually presented it at the Cannes Film Festival as part of the Cannes Classics. Funimation Entertainment suddenly stepped in, and they decided to acquire the North American rights to the restored edition to the movie that is actually made by pioneer Mitsuyo Seo. And for those of you curious about what this movie is about, so going into my source in Variety, It says here, Seal based the film story on the Japanese fairy tale of a boy named Momotaro, who was born from a peach and defeats monsters with the help of his animal friends. In the movie, Momotaro and his friends are now Japanese naval paratroopers, and the monsters represent the Allied powers. On the eve of a parachute mission during the war in the Pacific, a group of Navy paratroopers, a monkey, a dog, a pheasant, and a bear, go home for a brief visit before heading off with their squadron to their base in the South Pacific. Led by a boy warrior Momotaro, the paratroopers quickly overpower the horned white devils, who then surrender to Momotaro unconditionally as peace returns to the South Pacific. Now, there's actually more interesting info here. I just want to quickly mention, though, that considering that the movie was released in 1945, Momotaro was actually released during the weeks, and not just months, the weeks before World War II was at a close. And it says extra, Momotaro Sacred Sailors was backed by Japan's Ministry of the Navy and produced with a crew of 70 that includes Japanese animation pioneer Kenzo Masaoka as director of Shadowgraph. Few saw the movie in theaters when it was released, as most of Japan was fighting a war that would be lost months later. Okay, never mind, I just lied. It's not weeks, it's actually months. Never mind, I misread that. I am just a dum-dum. And, so I really was that dumb. It says, during the final months of World War II, fudge nabbit. Okay, so going back into what Funimation is doing, what they are actually planning is that they are going to be releasing it in every way possible. Funimation has now the exclusive rights to release the movie theatrically, digitally, and on home video for the U.S. and Canada. Now, to take a quote from the CEO and founder of Funimation, Jen Fukunaga, Mitsuyo Seo was a key figure in the development of Japan's anime industry, and we're honored to have been a part of the restoration of Momotaro's Sacred Sailors, one of his most famous works, said the CEO of Funimation. This wonderful black and white film was created using almost 50,000 selves and offers superb animation, music, and entertainment that is on par with any classic Disney film of the same era. Now, that may sound crazy, you know? Like this old Japanese animated film that would be on par with a Disney classic. Now, I've actually seen clips and bits of it. I didn't see the full movie just yet. It's only with, and I'm going to be very honest, it's only with this article that I discovered about Momotaro. I looked at some parts of Momotaro, and what Jen Fukunaga said. Yeah, it's actually pretty accurate, actually. The animation, unlike how anime is today, where it's pretty static, this animation is actually very smooth. This is a lot more smooth than any other Japanese film that you would find today. It has that smooth, like pretty much that sleek, smooth movements that you would find in a Disney film. The character designs, although they are pretty anime, they are arguably very anime-like, but it's almost as if it's kind of a transition where you could see there is a bit of old, like, ancient Japanese art style, but you could tell that they are going a bit into, like, the classic and the modern anime style that we would know today. And yes, like, they do include a lot of talking animal characters, but, you know, honestly, it really is fascinating. And believe it or not, the way that I discovered that is that, surprisingly, you can find the film on YouTube. It's not the restored version, but you can still actually go and check out the entire movie on YouTube. It's one of those films that they didn't put a copyright on, so, like, people would just go willy-nilly and, you know, just release the movie onto YouTube with no problems whatsoever. However, I can imagine in the future that could change, since now that Funimation has the rights, they are going to go and put, I can imagine they're just going to go and put up, like, they could put the content ID claims. Like, I know this is something that I'm fully against, but, like, when it comes to the content ID claims and the copyright on YouTube, It's the things like that where they need to go and attack. So I wouldn't be surprised if Funimation is, or like the system is actually going to go and take on those uploads of the entire film. But yeah, basically, in short, as of right now, you can actually go and check out the movie onto YouTube. But, you know, honestly, this is actually really fascinating that we're going to get a pretty good chance to actually see the first ever Japanese animated feature. And honestly, if we can actually get a chance to see this in theaters, I would be so into it, you know? Like, I would be all for it. It's not every day that you would get an older animated feature to be released in theaters. This is actually quite fascinating. Although I will say that it could be, like, in a very few selected theaters, like, a very limited run, like, stuff like that. Almost in the way, like, what they did with the Dragon Ball movies. But, still, this is gonna be, you know, still, like, experiencing the first ever Japanese animated feature, it's gonna be, you know, it's going to be a very fascinating and a very unique experience to see history come to life onto the big screen. And plus the fact that also it's going to get a chance to be released on Blu-ray and DVD and digital and stuff like that. I do hope that Funimation does a pretty good job doing like the bonus features and stuff like that, because honestly, I don't really know 100% if Funimation I'm sure somebody would tell me that, yeah, like they would do a good job or not when it comes to their DVD and Blu-ray ports, but I do hope that they do great justice to the bonus features. And for something like the first ever Japanese animated feature, Momotaro, honestly, with a movie like that, I expect they would give it the same quality as Criterion Road. Because honestly, like a film with such historical value, this is the kind that Criterion should be handling. But, you know, either way, we'll just have to wait and see how things go. They didn't announce yet when they're going to do these things, but like if I would give you guys a bit of a homework, definitely go and check out, like while you can, go and check out Momotaro on YouTube. It's actually a very fascinating film. Just go check it out, preserve the history of Japan's first ever animated feature. And, hopefully we'll see, we'll just hope for the best with, the future of the first ever Japanese animated feature. And so finally, we shall end things off with Matt's pick of the week. Now for Matt's pick of the week, I decided once again, I'm going to tap into my animation historian side. And this is going to be a little bit of a story. Now, I don't really have a news to tell you, but instead, I have a bit of a story. So listen up, gather around, children, because I am going to tell you of a fascinating story. And this is going to be regarding an event that happened on May 29th, 1941. So this week technically counts as the 70th anniversary of this event. And what I am talking about is a life-changing event for animators and the animation industry in general, what is known as the infamous Disney Artist Strike of 1941. Now, let me bring you back to that time on May 29th, 1941. It wasn't the best time at the Disney Studios. They pretty much put all their effort, all their love, and all their technical innovations onto movies such as Fantasia and Pinocchio, but unfortunately, they didn't really make a lot of money. In fact, some could even argue that they were kind of financial flops in a way. So, Disney wasn't really at their, you know, he wasn't really at his prime like he was in Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. So, what they were pretty much doing at the time was that now they are working hard in order to achieve their technical finesse to make realistic animals with Bambi, and they're pretty much currently making Dumbo in order to pretty much, they want to make something cheap and they want to make something fast so that at least they can, you know, get back the money that they lost onto movies like Pinocchio and Fantasia. However, during that time, they were in a new studio. Now, when they were making Snow White and the Silly Symphony films, they were at the Hyperion Studio, and it was said to be this garden of Eden for animators. It was a place not just for making cartoons. It was a place where they thought up of ideas and they thought up of new techniques that would forever revolutionize the art of animation and the art of storytelling. However, Walt Disney, with the money that he earned with Snow White, he decided he wanted to grow bigger. And so he decided to go and create this new studio in Burbank. And things were a bit different. It didn't feel like an entire community of animators. You know, like, everybody felt a lot more separate than they were before. It's not like all for one and one for all. Now it's kind of like every man for themselves. And what's even worse is the wages. There were some people, they were working a lot more harder than they should, and they were paid a lot less than they should. So with that said, a lot of people were just fed up, and they decided to go on a strike. And this would include, this actually includes about half of the animators who worked at Disney at the time. And pretty much what they were demanding, by the way, I'm taking this from my source at Cartoon Brew, who decided to dedicate this special event. Now, they were pretty much saying that what they wanted is pretty much a union. They want to have the benefits of a union, which is something that Disney is completely against. They wanted to go, hold on a sec, there's something here that mentioned what they pretty much wanted, and somewhere over here. I know that they demanded, but there's like an entire, there's a good list of what they wanted. I think it's somewhere. Okay, yeah. Okay, but basically what I'm trying to say. Ah, yes. Okay, yeah. So pretty much what they demanded was that they demanded better working conditions, and they also want like good medical care, because that's kind of the thing, is that, you know, with all the chemicals that they have at the Disney studio, you never know, like, what the health conditions are in there. And, you know, this really made such a giant impact, considering that we're talking about Disney. Back then, and, well, still now, they were pretty much the biggest studio making animation. With Snow White was the biggest hit in not just in animation history, but in cinema in general. It was, like, one of the biggest success stories ever told. But now people are just fed up, and they were just like tired of it. In fact, if I may go into this, going into this quote here, it was the civil war of animation, said Tom Cito, former president of the Animation Guild Locale 839 and the Disney and a Disney animator story artist in the 80s and 90s. The strike paved the way for Hollywood animators to earn pensions, medical insurance, and the highest standards of living in the animation world. That's what I was looking for. Thank you very much, Tom Cito. And, pretty much Disney was the biggest company in animation. And even beforehand, this is not technically the first strike to ever occur in animation. There have been some before, like at Fleischer Studios, but the fact that Disney broke down and had their animators go on a strike, that was the biggest thing. And it even went on for a while. And what's even more shocking, it's not just the little people, you know? It's not just the little people who decided to go out and form a strike, while, like, the big animators like Percy Pierce or Ham Lusk or Norm MacDonald, Fred Moore, and also the Nine Old Men, like, they decided to stay and make the animated films. It's not really like that. There are some big people who went on a strike as well. And this would actually include legendary animator and who was arguably one of the best animators at the time, Art Babbitt. He saw the problems that were going on with the strike and stuff like that. He understood them, and he decided to join them on a strike. And this strike went on for a while, trust me. It was hard to break either side. Walt Disney was not like Walt Disney was a tough cookie to crack, and so were the animators. And it went on until the fall, pretty much, where Disney decided to break, and he decided, okay, I'm going to give you what you want. And it, like, a lot of people can argue that things pretty much changed for the studio, and it kind of changed Walt Disney himself in a way. Now, that is debatable on how much. And, like, when you think about it back then, even to this day, there are some ways that people are still fighting, you know? Some animators are still fighting to this day regarding, you know, getting better, you know, getting a better standard of living for animation. Like, as you guys may know, there is currently the infamous wage-fixing lawsuit, where you got all the major animation studios in one big case where they pretty much agreed to lower the wages of employees almost to the point that is pretty much illegal, and also to the point that where they decided to agree not to poach each other's employees. It's almost up to that point, and the entire thing is led by Ed Catmull, which is pretty much why, like, these leaders are pretty much against these unions, to ensure that, like, they have these for these artists to have, like, a certain standard, to have, like, medical insurance, and to have, like, a good pay in order to at least frickin' live. And honestly, like, it's still a battle that people are fighting, but this 1941 strike was a huge example of pretty much animators, the little guys, pretty much rallying up and fight against the big man for a better standard of living. Because that's unfortunately one of the infamous things that the animation industry is known for, sadly, is that the animators working on the animated films, you know, it's not really the most pleasant job. Like, yeah, when you think about it, like, oh, working on an animated feature is like a dream, you know? You could be a part of a legacy, being, like, a part of the people that made Frozen and stuff like that. But in reality, you might end up on a deadbeat job with people, like, with people that you pretty much hate. And you kind of live, like, with low salary working at Sony Pictures Animation or something like that, you know? Like, kind of be be equally miserable working there as much as, like, working on a deadbeat job like Walmart or McDonald's and stuff like that. If there's anything that we can learn from the 1941 strike, is that animators can definitely work together in order to have a better way of life, to make the job of an animator better than what it is right now. It's still a continuing battle to fight against big leaders who are against this union in order for them to have more money and for the animators to pretty much be left in the dust. But as an artist, like, when you form together, you're pretty much strong. You're even stronger than, like, any CEO working there. So that's pretty much a big impact and one of the biggest things that we can learn from 1941. Like, even, like, if these people are, like, if these artists are able to break Walt Disney himself, then you can pretty much do anything. And I think that's one of the biggest lessons here, and I think it's a very vital and important part of animation history in terms of the business and how things pretty much work out. And this would pretty much go on to ultimately go into a big chain of events where, like, lives have been changed, the business have been changed, and even when you look into the pictures, you know, it's kind of shocking, and especially how people would be protesting for a while. And one of the biggest examples that they would use is the recent feature film that they released back then, which was The Reluctant Dragon, and would use that as a prominent example to go and make a strike. Like, you would even see pictures of, like, you know, premieres of Reluctant Dragon, and you would just see people go out on picket signs, and it's kind of crazy. And, you know, it's kind of crazy. But if there's anything we can learn from the strike, is that artists are strong. When formed together, they can be a strong force to reckon with. And that is pretty much it that I've got this week, so thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can find more of my work at film-book.com, just search for Mathieu Brunet, or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at anime505. If you listen to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, then go out there, do us a little favor, and rate and review this episode. That would be amazing. If you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button and leave us a little comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening. And until next week, see you later, dudes.